Chapter 44. From one of those meetings, bought a bottle of lager beer and drank it on the premises a drugstore. A tempest of indignation swept the town. Our clergyman and everybody else said the culprit had not only done an innocent thing, but had done it in an open, manly way, and it was nobody's right or business to find fault with it. Perhaps this dangerous latitude comes of the fact that we never have any temperance outgoing on in Hartford. I find here a letter from Orion, submitting some new matter in his story for criticism. When you write him, please tell him to do the best he can and bang away. I can do nothing further in this matter, for I have but 3 days left in which to settle a deal of important business, and answer a bushel and a half of letters. I am very nearly tired to death. I was so jaded and worn, at the Taylor dinner, that I found I could not remember 3 sentences of the speech I had memorized, and therefore got up and said so, and excused myself from speaking. I arrived here at 3 o'clock this morning. I think the next 3 days will finish me. The idea of sitting down to a job of literary criticism is simply ludicrous. A young lady passenger in our ship has been placed under Livy's charge. Livy couldn't easily get out of it, and did not want to, on her own account, but fully expected I would make trouble when I heard of it. But I didn't. A girl can't well travel alone, so I offered no objection. She leaves us at Hamburg. So I've got 6 people in my care, now which is just 6 too many for a man of my unexecutive capacity. I expect nothing else, but to lose some of them overboard. We send our loving goodbyes to all the household, and hope to see you again after a spell. Affly ears. Sam. There are no other American letters of this period. The Clemens party, which included Miss Clara Spalding, of Elmira, sailed as planned, on the Alsatia, April 11, 1878. As before stated, Bayard Taylor was on the ship, also Muir Talstead and family. On the eve of departure, Clemens sent to Howells this farewell word. "N.D. That reminds me, ungrateful dog that I am, that I owe as much to your training as the rude country job printer owes to the city boss who takes him in hand, and teaches him the right way to handle his art. I was talking to Mrs. Clemens about this the other day, and grieving because I never mentioned it to you, thereby seeming to ignore it, or to be unaware of it. Nothing that has passed under your eye needs any revision, before going into a volume, while all my other stuff does need so much. A characteristic tribute, and from the heart. The first European letter came from Frankfurt, a rest on their way to Heidelberg. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Frankfurt on the Main, May 4, 1878. My dear Howells, I only propose to write a single line, to say we are still around. Ah, I have such a deep, grateful, unutterable sense of being out of it all. I think I foretaste some of the advantages of being dead. Some of the joy of it. I don't read any newspapers or care for them. When people tell me England has declared war, I drop the subject, feeling that it is none of my business. When they tell me Mrs. Tilton has confessed and Mr. B. denied, I say both of them have done that before, therefore let the worn stub of the Plymouth whitewash brush be brought out once more, and let the faithful spit on their hands, and get to work again regardless of me, for I am out of it all. We had 2 almost devilish weeks at sea, and I tell you Bayard Taylor is a really lovable man, which you already knew. Then we stayed a week in the very beautiful city of Hamburg. And since then we have been fooling along, 4 hours per day by rail, with a courier, spending the other 20 in hotels whose enormous bedchambers and private parlors are an overpowering marvel to me. Day before yesterday, in Castle, we had a love of a bedroom, 31 feet long, and a parlor with 2 sofas, 12 chairs, a writing desk and 4 tables scattered around, here and there in it. Made of red silk too, by George. The times and times I wish you were along. You could throw some fun into the journey, whereas I go on, day by day, in a smileless state of solemn admiration. What a paradise this is! What clean clothes, what good faces, what tranquil contentment, what prosperity, what genuine freedom, what superb government! And I am so happy, for I am responsible for none of it. I am only here to enjoy. How charmed I am when I overhear a German word which I understand. With love from us two to you too. Mark. P.S. We are not taking 6 days to go from Hamburg to Heidelberg, because we prefer it. Quite on the contrary. Mrs. Clemens picked up a dreadful cold and sore throat on board ship, and still keeps them in stock so she could only travel 4 hours a day. She wanted to dive straight through, but I had different notions about the wisdom of it. I found that 4 hours a day was the best she could do. Before I forget it, our permanent address is Care Messrs. Keister & Company, Backers, Heidelberg. We go there tomorrow. Poor Susie. From the day we reached German soil, we have required Rosa to speak German to the children, which they hate with all their souls. The other morning in Hanover, Susie came to us from Rosa in the nursery and said, in halting syllables, Papa, wie viel ist es? Then turned with pathos in her big eyes and said, Mama, I wish Rosa was made in English. Unfinished. Frankfurt was a brief halting place, their destination being Heidelberg. They were presently located there in the beautiful Schloss Hotel, which overlooks the old castle with its forest setting, the flowing Neckar, and the distant valley of the Rhine. Clemens, who had discovered the location and loved it, toward the end of May reported to Howells his felicities. Part of letter to W.D. Howells, in Boston. Schloss Hotel Heidelberg, Sunday, a.m., May 26, 1878. My dear Howells, divinely located. From this airy porch among the shining groves we look down upon Heidelberg Castle, and upon the swift Neckar, and the town, and out over the wide green level of the Rhine Valley, a marvelous prospect. We are in a cul-de-sac formed of hill ranges and river. We are on the side of a steep mountain. The river at our feet is walled, on its other side, yes, on both sides, by a steep and wooded mountain range which rises abruptly aloft from the water's edge. Portions of these mountains are densely wooded. The plain of the Rhine, seen through the mouth of this pocket, has many and peculiar charms for the eye. Our bedroom has two great glass bird cages, enclosed balconies, one looking toward the Rhine Valley and sunset, the other looking up the Neckar cul-de-sac, and naturally we spend nearly all our time in these dash, when one is sunny the other is shady. We have tables and chairs in them. We do our reading, writing, studying, smoking, and suppering in them. The view from these bird cages is my despair. The pictures change from one enchanting aspect to another in ceaseless procession, never keeping one form half an hour, and never taking on an unlovely one. And then Heidelberg on a dark night. It is massed, away down there, almost right under us, you know, and stretches off toward the valley. Its curved and interlacing streets are a cobweb, beaded thick with lights, a wonderful thing to see. Then the rows of lights on the arched bridges, and their glinting reflections in the water, and away at the far end, the Eisenbahnhof, with its 20 solid acres of glittering gas jets, a huge garden, as one may say, whose every plant is a flame. These balconies are the darlingest things. I have spent all the morning in this north one. Counting big and little, it has 256 panes of glass in it. So one is in effect right out in the free sunshine, and yet sheltered from wind and rain and likewise doored and curtained from whatever may be going on in the bedroom. It must have been a noble genius who devised this hotel. Lord, how blessed is the repose, the tranquility of this place. Only two sounds, the happy clamor of the birds in the groves, and the muffled music of the Neckar, tumbling over the opposing dikes. It is no hardship to lie awake a while, nights, for this subdued roar has exactly the sound of a steady rain beating upon a roof. It is so healing to the spirit, and it bears up the thread of one's imaginings as the accompaniment bears up a song. While Livy and Miss Spaulding have been writing at this table, I have sat tilted back, nearby, with a pipe and the last Atlantic, and read Charlie Warner's article with prodigious enjoyment. I think it is exquisite. I think it must be the roundest and broadest and completest short essay he has ever written. It is clear, and compact, and charmingly done. The hotel grounds join, and communicate with the castle grounds. So we and the children loaf in the winding paths of those leafy vastnesses a great deal, and drink beer and listen to excellent music. When we first came to this hotel, a couple of weeks ago, I pointed to a house across the river, and said I meant to rent the center room on the 3D floor for a work room. Jokingly we got to speaking of it as my office, and amused ourselves with watching why people daily in their small grounds and trying to make out what we could of their dress, and see, comma without a glass. Well, I loafed along there one day, and found on that house the only sign of the kind on that side of the river : Moblert Woning Zuver Myathen. I went in, and rented that very room which I had long ago selected. There was only one other room in the whole double dash house unrented. It occurs to me that I made a great mistake in not thinking to deliver a very bad German speech, every other sentence pieced out with English, at the Bayard Taylor banquet in New York. I think I could have made it one of the features of the occasion. He used this plan at a gathering of the American students in Heidelberg, on July 4th, with great effect, so his idea was not wasted. We left Hartford before the end of March, and I have been idle ever since. I have waited for a call. To go to work, I knew it would come. Well, it began to come a week ago. My notebook comes out more and more frequently every day since. 3 days ago I concluded to move my manuscript over to my den. Now the call is loud, and decided at last. So tomorrow I shall begin regular, steady work, and stick to it till middle of July or 1st August, when I look for Twitchell. We will then walk about Germany 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'll go to work again, perhaps in Munich. We both send a power of love to the Howellses, and we do wish you were here. Are you in the new house? Tell us about it. Ears ever, Mark. There has been no former mention in the letters of the coming of Twitchell, yet this had been a part of the European plan. Mark Twain had invited his walking companion to make a tramp with him through Europe, as his guest. Material for the new book would grow faster with Twitchell as a companion, and these two, in spite of their widely opposed views concerning Providence, and the general scheme of creation, were wholly congenial comrades. Twitchell, in Hartford, expecting to receive the final summons to start, wrote : Oh, my, do you realize, Mark, what a symposium it is to be? I do. To begin with, I am thoroughly tired, and the rest will be worth everything. To walk with you and talk with you for weeks together, why, it's my dream of luxury. August 1st brought Twitchell, and the friends set out without delay on a tramp through the Black Forest, making short excursions at first, but presently extending them in the direction of Switzerland. Mrs. Clemens and the others remained in Heidelberg to follow at their leisure. To Mrs. Clemens her husband sent frequent reports of their wanderings. It will be seen that their tramp did not confine itself to pedestrianism, though they did, in fact, walk a great deal, and Mark Twain in a note to his mother declared, "I loathe all travel, except on foot." The reports to Mrs. Clemens follow. Letters to Mrs. Clemens, in Heidelberg. Allerheiligen August 5, 1878, 8:30 p.m. Livy darling, we had a rattling good time today, but we came very near being left at Baden-Baden, for instead of waiting in the waiting room, we sat down on the platform, to wait where the trains come in from the other direction. We sat there full 10 minutes, and then all of a sudden it occurred to me that that was not the right place. On the train the principal of the big English school at Nauheim, of which Mr. Sheeting was a teacher, introduced himself to me, and then he mapped out our day for us, for today and tomorrow, and also drew a map, and gave us directions, how to proceed through Switzerland. He had his entire school with him, taking them on a prodigious trip through Switzerland, tickets for the round trip $10 apiece. He has done this annually for 10 years. We took a post carriage from Aachen to Unterhofen for 7 marks, stopped at the Pfleg to drink beer, and saw that pretty girl again at a distance. Her father, mother, and 2 brothers received me like an ancient customer and sat down and talked, as long as I had any German left. The big room was full of red-vested farmers, the Gemeinderäte of the district, with the Bürgermeister at the head, drinking beer and talking public business. They had held an election, and chosen a new member, and had been drinking beer at his expense for several hours. It was intensely black foresty. There was an Australian there, a student from Stuttgart or somewhere, and Joe told him who I was, and he laid himself out to make our course plain for us, so I am certain we can't get lost between here and Heidelberg. We walked the carriage road till we came to that place, where one sees the footpath on the other side of the ravine, then we crossed over and took that for a good, while we were in a dense forest and judged we were lost, but met a native woman who said we were all right. We fooled along, and got there at 6 p.m. and ate supper, then followed down the ravine to the foot of the falls, then struck into a blind path, to see where it would go, and just about dark we fetched up at the Devil's Pulpit on top of the hills. Then home. And now to bed, pretty sleepy. Joe sends love, and I send 1,000 times as much, my darling. S50. C. Hotel Genin. Livy darling, we had a lovely day, jogged right along, with a good horse and sensible driver the last 2 hours right behind an open carriage filled with a pleasant German family, old gentleman and 3 pretty daughters. At table d'hote tonight, 3 dishes were enough for me, and then I bored along tediously through the bill of fare, with a backache, not daring to get up and bow to the German family and leave. I meant to sit it through, and make them get up, and do the bowing, but at last Joe took pity on me, and said he would get up, and drop them a curtsy, and put me out of my misery. I was grateful. He got up, and delivered a succession of frank and hearty bows, accompanying them with an atmosphere of good fellowship which would have made even an English family surrender. Of course the Germans responded, then I got right up, and they had to respond to my salams too. So that was done. We walked up a gorge and saw a tumbling waterfall which was nothing to Giesbach, but it made me resolve to drop you a line, and urge you to go and see Giesbach illuminated. Don't fail but take a long day's rest, first. I love you, sweetheart. SAML. Over the Gemmi Pass. 4. 3:30 p.m. Saturday, August 24, 1878. Livy darling, Joe and I have had a most noble day. Started to climb on foot at 8:30 this morning among the grandest peaks. Every half hour carried us back a month in the season. We left them harvesting 2D crop. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.